Hey guys, if you want updates on our latest episodes, then be sure to subscribe to the Film Colossus podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Also, if you'd like to support the show and hear episodes ad-free, then subscribe to our Patreon page at patreon.com/filmcolossus.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
My name is Chris Lambert.
And my name is Travis Bean. And welcome to part three of the Fast and Furious Marathon. So far, we've talked through the first six movies. And today we are talking about Furious 7 and Fate of the Furious. Two movies I know we do not see eye to eye on. So expect a tumultuous debate. Welcome to Film Colossus, your guide to movies.
On the first part of our Fast and Furious series, we talked about the first three movies and... Well,
first
to
two
you,
movies.
It was only two movies, but I still can't believe
Tokyo Drift's not a real movie in my mind. It is just like it's something that exists in the ether.
Yeah, not a Fast and Furious movie, despite it being in the title, just right there,
and not a bad movie.
So we talked about the first three, and mostly in agreement on those movies. Mm-hmm. And then in the last episode. We're also mostly in agreement for a good majority of the episode
until
about
Giselle
four,
died.
Five, and six. Yeah, and then when we started talking about the death of Giselle, things just went off the rails.
Yeah,
and I don't think it's going to get better this episode.
Well, I feel like I've thought a lot about those 15 to 20 minutes we were arguing about one freaking scene, and I feel like it's going to completely color everything we're going to talk about today.
Oh, 1,000%.
Because I feel like every complaint you're going to have is going to be in that vein.
Yes.
So I've kind of mentally prepared myself for this, where like I know your attitude on the movies and I know how you're viewing the story and how they explore the characters, and like I know I inherently disagree. So I want to make sure this is a fruitful conversation we're going to have about these movies, and that we're going to at least like, I don't know. I guess it's just going to be a big debate. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, I'm going to make sure this fruit withers on the vine, Travis.
Because, yes, we have been pretty much in agreement so far. One and two are great. Three, you know, maybe a bit of a step back. Four, not nearly as good. You think it's bad.
I think it's bad.
I think it's very good. But it's missing some key pieces that make the Fast and Furious movies transcendent. And then we both agree that five and six are pretty great.
Yes.
But I'm pretty sure you don't like any of these last three movies.
No. I do not.
And for just to preface all this, like, I think Furious 7 is great. It has problems. Like, I would put it in the same vein as Fast and Furious. Like, I see what it's trying to do, but like some things are just going wrong. Fate of the Furious is majestic, and F9 is a little bit of a miss, but still, compared to the movies we get these days, it's a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, where 7 for me, I'm rolling my eyes the entire time. I think it's a gigantic step back. 8, I thought had some good ideas, and I can see why it's like right up your alley, but I also got like pretty annoyed with a lot of what was going on. And then 9, I just hate. Like, so it's the worst one in the entire franchise to me.
F9 is my second worst. So, you know, I'm not too far off from you, although you think it's terrible. So we're pretty far off, actually.
Yeah, because even though it's second worst for you, this is still your favorite like, film franchise in existence.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's a big part of it for me. And maybe inherently, like, that's maybe you can't, some people can't trust my opinion because of that, but I'm pretty invested in these movies. They've been a big part of my life for a long time, and I read the energy and story a little bit differently. I maybe give it the benefit of the doubt sometimes, but I also don't think I'm necessarily giving it the benefit of the doubt because I'm so entrenched in the movies that I feel like I fully understand their energy and how they tell their stories. And, you know, people like Chris, I don't know, people, just as an example, someone like Chris Lambert just isn't as ingrained into it as I am and doesn't have the kind of insight I do.
Or, or hear me out.
No, thank you.
So, Fast 7.
Furious 7. See, how much can I trust you when you don't even know the name of the movie?
I know, I'm being so disrespectful. So disrespectful.
I don't even know how we get into this. Like, maybe we could start with the things we agree on.
What do we agree on about this movie?
I think that... Okay, part of the reason I love this movie is the storyline of Paul Walker, who died while they were filming it, and they had to refilm scenes with him, where his brother was a stand-in. And to me, those scenes really stick out in a way that could have totally been handled well, and isn't handled necessarily poorly in these movies, but I think it's a little choppy and gives it a strange energy, especially the very end when they do the kind of epilogue. Like, I think some of those choices are just off and are distracting in a way, because they make it so clear Paul's not there, and that, like, there's commentary on Paul not being there. And again, that can work if that's, like, an inherently meta part of the movie, like part of the aesthetic, but it's not. Like, that's just them, like, calling out that Paul Walker died, because it's this movie's gonna make billions of dollars at the box office and you have to call it out. And I think because of that, like, it's a weird moment where, like, the studio and the artists, like, aren't really meshing, and, like, the studio is kind of forcing the artists to explore this thing that isn't necessarily part of the movie. I don't know. Again, it can work, and I like that it's here. I bawl my brains out every time when the ending happens, but I have to admit that the energy is weird.
You know, this might surprise you, but having watched this movie for the first time in 2023, obviously I knew what happened with Paul Walker, but not the details of what was going on with filming. Like, I vaguely remember at the time that they were in the middle of the movie, but I had no concept of what happened. Like, things that you're saying about them recording scenes with Paul Walker's brother as a stand-in.
Yeah.
No idea. I did not pick up at any point throughout this movie that they didn't have Paul Walker for something where they needed him. So
it makes me think you weren't watching the movie very closely.
I mean, maybe not. I felt like, I mean, the only thing was at the very end, right, where, like, that was clearly, like, in honor of him. And you have kind of the CGI at the end.
Yeah.
That was a little, like, strange, but I got it, and I was also crying a lot. But throughout, like, the rest of the movie, I was pretty, like, okay with everything that was going on with Brian. Like, I didn't really, I was like, that was off, that was off, that was off, but maybe I wasn't.
Well, some of it's just, like, I mean, the CGI is only as good as it can be. It's not like I'm asking to see Paul Walker. He's not there. But I guess in my mind, like, it does stick out when he's clearly not there and it doesn't even look like him. When he's saying something, like, off screen, like, the camera's not even on him. Like, there are just weird moments like that where, like, I just can't help in those moments but feel like something different could have been done. And I hate to say it, but I feel like they probably should have killed off his character. Like, that would have been the more honorable thing to do, because now the franchise is stuck in this, like, weird dance around Brian's character constantly, to the point where, like, they have to bring him back at some point. I feel like in Furious 12, like, it's going to happen, or in Fast X Part 3. all that, again, maybe this is just me, more my impression as a big fan who's seen this several times, and it's just stuck out to me every time. And as the movies go on, like, that energy gets weirder and weirder to me, and I just feel like maybe they made the wrong decision by keeping him around.
It has been awkward in every movie where they have to have some dialogue where it's like, Brian? And he's like, no, Brian's retired.
It's the most egregious in Fate of the Furious.
Yeah, it comes up a lot, especially because in 7, they don't really have Jordana Brewster all that. Or no, I guess they reintroduce her in 9? Huh.
And F9, she comes back as a major character, yeah.
Yeah, F, like, Fate of the Furious, she's not in it as much.
No, she's in it for just one scene, I think, to pick up Vin Diesel's kid.
So it's like, you kind of have... bringing her back, finding ways to bring her back and make her part of the group when she should be off with Brian being retired also creates, like, a bit of weird energy tension that... You get it when you know what's going on, but it's also asking you to really, like, suspend your disbelief more so than maybe what, like, some people can do at times.
Yeah. But I will say that because Paul Walker died and because we know that he's not going to be in the movies anymore, some scenes do hit a lot harder because of it. Like, that conversation he has with Jordana Brewster, Brian and Mia talk on the phone, where Brian says he might not make it back. And Mia says, like, don't say goodbye like that. Like, say something else. And that part gets to me way more even than the ending. Like, that part destroys me every time I watch it. And it's just affecting, like, the acting's incredible. Like, it just works on its own as is. And then you add in that element. It's crazy.
I didn't know what they did with the character. And so with Owen Shaw... and his whole arc of killing off members of the family, I seriously thought that was going to be the tipping point that made him, like, such a villain. Is not only did he take out Han in Tokyo Drift as that retcon, but he was going to take out Brian, and that was going to make him such a villain. Mm. And so with what you're saying, like, it might have been cleaner for the franchise going forward. It seemed like the thing they were setting up.
Right.
And it was kind of, like, jarring to me when they didn't go that direction.
Yeah.
But then I also get why it's like, totally. In movies, Paul Walker can live on. If he's passed in real life, you can give his character this life that Paul didn't get to live, which is making me tear up right now.
And I think it totally works for Brian's character. Like, thinking about his journey from, like, didn't know if he was a good guy or a bad guy, in quotes, like, where he fit, and learning, like, this whole storyline that he misses the bullets and that he isn't ready to be a father. Like, I think step by step from movie to movie, they've done an amazing job of building his character and getting him to that point and being ready to exit the franchise. Like, that actually worked really well. So in that sense, it was great. I just think afterwards is where they've really fumbled it, like, constantly talking about him and hinting that he's going to come back.
Yeah. Like, Brian? No. And so those were aspects that I liked, but everything else, so I complained about this in my rankings for John Wick. I like John Wick. I didn't like when John Wick leaned into the world of the assassins. And building out this secret society of assassins, and they're actually everywhere and control all this stuff.
So you're not a fan of Mr. Nobody?
I think the Mr. Nobody stuff is too ridiculous.
It's pretty ridiculous. It's
not something that I typically... It's just like a general pet peeve of mine. Especially, I think we had talked about how grounded the original movie was.
Mm-hmm.
And even with Too Fast, Too Furious getting a little more, like, outrageous in some of its action sequences,
right,
and what it's asking you to do,
there's a groundedness
even in Fast 5 when it's getting even more crazy, like 6.
Yeah.
There's still, like, this groundedness. Yes. But now we're at a point where you introduce Mr. Nobody, and suddenly you have these government forces everywhere, the technology ramps up, everything escalates to a point of kind of absurdity, which has its own appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And I get why that energy can be very fun for a lot of people. It's just a different energy than what I was enjoying from these movies. It feels like it becomes, like, a little bit of a crutch to me.
Okay. And I actually think we're a little more aligned on this than you think. I mean, it doesn't ruin the experience for me. I just think it's a different experience. What then works for you about Fast X, which to me is a pretty cartoonish, outlandish movie?
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
I think that it's, for the most part, it's a much more simple dynamic of a villain that's using some resources versus like having this whole government entity that's bringing things in, and you have the government ops and the government tools that everybody's using. Like, I feel like in Fast X, they're kind of not necessarily back to basics in some ways, but on their own in a way, to where the Brie Larson subplot is just more of a subplot rather than this overarching thing that's guiding the characters.
Interesting.
Like, the main characters are like elevating them. It was just, I think, a little more toned down than all the stuff with Mr. Nobody and how that was handled. But I toned down in terms of like the presence of, I mean, but the main villain, like, you have him working with the jacked guy,
yeah,
who's Mr. Nobody's replacement. So it's not like the whole government agency is out of the picture entirely or anything. And Fast X is over the top in ways that 7 and 8 and 9, like, it goes beyond even those. But I think that it just does it in a way that feels a little less cheesy to me.
At Merrill West Credit Union, we're working towards a brighter financial future for both our members and our community, knowing that when you succeed, we all succeed. That starts with a solid financial foundation. As a credit union, we have no stockholders demanding profits. Our commitment is to our members. Experience the difference with our Money Market Max Bonus promotion, offering a cash incentive for letting us protect and grow your money. Merrill West Credit Union, working for you. Today, tomorrow, together. Merrill West Credit Union is insured by NCUA.
We'd all love to hit skip on our problems now and again, but using weed to deal with stress as a teen won't make your issues go away. That's because THC messes with parts of the brain responsible for fear and anxiety, making it even harder to manage them on your own. So even the smaller things can start to feel difficult to handle. Learn better ways to deal with stress at mindovermarijuana.com. That's mindovermarijuana.com.
Sponsored by the California Department of Public Health.
That's fair. I am a little bit in agreement with you. Again, I think Fury 7 works. I like the overblown aesthetic. I think James Wan is awesome. Malignant is literally, legitimately one of my favorite movies ever. Like, I really love the manic tone he brings to his movies. I'm a big fan of Aquaman. I know Chris hates Aquaman, but like, to me, there's something very moving about like the energy and movement and colors of that movie. Like, all that to me overshadows any story problems to me. That is the story. Like, what I'm watching unfold is like magnificent. So like, I think that energy is here in a way that I really appreciate. I like that it's over the top. I love watching The Rock bust out of his cast. Like, that shit gets me going. I'm just excited when someone is so committed to an aesthetic. And he definitely is here. But I'm with you in the sense that, like, sometimes it goes a little too far and feels fake. And that's when I know I'm being pulled out of a Fast movie, when something that happens in Fast and Furious movies feels fake. Like, everything's fake. Like, everything's ridiculous in these movies. These people could never, like, when Vin Diesel and Paul Walker jump off a cliff and land in the water and are totally okay, that's ridiculous. But because of like the movement and tenor of that movie, and because of just the emotional drive of characters, like, I don't feel that it's fake in the moment. I think it's working. So I think that's the big problem here, is the writing's a little off. Like, the character journeys aren't as solid as I'd like them to be. Mostly outside of, I would say Brian's and Mia's story is great, but like, outside of that, like, a lot of the characters aren't fully utilized in the right way. And yeah, because of that, it kind of kills like the tenor and flow. And there's stuff that just doesn't work as well as it should. Like, I think specifically the whole final last scene, there are just moments that like, they feel fake to me. Like, when The Rock, I know you hate this part, but when The Rock crashes the ambulance into the drone or whatever, like, it isn't that that kind of thing doesn't happen in the Fast and Furious movies. It's just that I never notice that it's happening. I don't see that happening and go like, wait a minute, like, how, what, like, that, it's not like they set up the beat of like The Rock, like, seeing where the drone is and driving in at the last second. Like, I don't need to see that, but I need it to be properly part of the aesthetic and the mood and the feel. And there's just something that isn't meshing with the script and the action of this movie in a way that I think throws it off. So that's my experience of Furious 7, is like, I'm a little disappointed in the story and how they're handling the characters, but I love everything James Wan is doing so much that I'm just kind of like sitting there drooling and like taking it in.
See, I kind of blame James Wan for moments like that.
I'm with you. It's on the director to figure that out.
In case people don't remember that scene, there's a car chase, and it's Letty and
Ramsey
in this car, and a drone is chasing them. And The Rock has just gotten out of the hospital after seeing these explosions from the chases across Los Angeles. It's this big thing. So he gets out of the hospital, steals an ambulance, breaks out of his cast by flexing. Is just driving on the highway, and you just see him driving on the highway. You don't see him, like, as you're saying, like, catch sight of someone or anything. It's just him driving on a highway. And then with Letty, she drives into a tunnel, and you have this scene of her in a tunnel trying to outmaneuver this drone that's tracking them. A predator missile. And it's tracking them, and right as they get out of the tunnel, The Rock drives over the
road
that's on top of the tunnel. Yeah, the tunnel itself was like the underpass of a bridge. He drives off the bridge and crashes on the Predator missile as soon as it leaves the tunnel. And it's just, I mean, there's outrageous things that happen in these movies all the time, like Dom launching himself from a car and catching Letty in midair.
Crazy.
And them, like, carrying through, even in this movie, driving between the towers.
Crazy.
Right? Which I liked that.
That's
moment.
Better. That's, yeah, that works.
Yeah. Because to me, there's just a thing of, like, if I was playing with action figures and just being like, is this something I would do with action figures, like as a kid?
Yeah, right.
Just like, could it work possibly? Sure. If I can do that, even them like falling all that way into the water and not being hurt, it's like, could it happen? Sure. Like, if I'm thinking about it and I'm being realistic about it, no. Could a car backing out of a helicopter and landing on the road just immediately start driving and do all this cool stuff? No, but maybe. With this, there's no possible way Hobbs could calculate where the Predator missile that was just in a long tunnel was. When he didn't even see them, had no concept of it, he would have just been blindly driving off the edge of a bridge without knowing where anybody was.
I think you were right what you said earlier. Like, it lacks groundedness in a way. Like, I don't necessarily need that. Like, I'm okay with a movie like flying high and far and like just doing supernatural things, but there has always been an element to the movies where like things make sense, in quotes, in the universe they've built. So when stuff sticks out, and there's other stuff in this whole final scene, as I'm thinking about it now, this movie actually would have been great to me if they had just fixed the whole final sequence. like the part where like The Rock says the street always wins and stomps on the ground, like every time he says it, I'm like, what does that mean? Like, it makes no sense. Like, it just feels clunky and blockheaded. And then like when he launches his car out of the parking garage, which is another scene that's insane, that he constantly keeps going in circles around the parking garage, but it keeps the parking garage keeps collapsing behind him. Like, that makes no sense. and then when he launches out again, any of this stuff distracts me too much and I care too much, but like when this much of it happens over and over, I'm kind of like, eh. And then when he launches out of the parking garage, the only way he's able to delicately dangle a bag of grenades from that helicopter as he's flying by it, which is maybe the most impressive thing anybody's ever done in any of these movies, is because the helicopter moves itself out of the way at the last second. Like, I don't know what his plan was, but it just worked out that helicopter moved out of the way. And then The Rock, like, not missing a beat, knows what Vin Diesel has done and fires a gun. Like, it's all of that. I'm kind of like, okay, like, you're having fun, I guess, but it's a little too dumb.
Yeah, that's yes.
But I still like it and drool.
Damn it. No, I think that there was a really, like, they're good concepts, like Owen Shaw's or Deckard Shaw's, like, I'm going to get revenge plot is cool. But then the villain also makes no sense.
We have to get into him.
It's a waste of Digimon.
Oh, yeah. That's too bad. He's so great.
Yeah. The character just has no development. It's just like,
they really half-assed that.
Yeah. And the fact that Deckard is subordinate to him, but Deckard's presented as a main villain, it was just stupid. It's the first time I felt like the characters were starting to get a little derivative of themselves, like some of the family. I'm thinking specifically, and I've complained about this before, but Tej and Roman and their dynamic. It seemed like they really...
I completely disagree. That's one of my favorite parts of these movies is I maybe with you in a little bit of the sense that I wish they had more of a character. Like, I wish I knew more about them and like saw them grow a little bit, but I'm okay with characters being there for color. And I don't necessarily need to learn information about them to like them more. I like the role they play. They give the movie those rougher edges, like the playful banter. There's just something about what they're bringing to it that keeps the movie energetic and watchable to me in a way that I can't complain about it, is all the way I'd put it.
It's just too one-dimensional to me. Like,
right.
I want their characters to have a little more, be doing a little more, which
I get that.
I like in Fast X that they give.
It's great.
It doesn't work out so well, but Roman trying to take on the leadership role, right?
Great.
And having his mission, and like just having something like that is enough. And I don't think they were doing enough of that in 789.
I'm with you. We agree there. Like, I do wish they had more, but I'm okay with the way they utilize them.
Yeah. So, Fate of the Furious.
Yeah, this is the one, Chris.
I mean,
I absolutely love this movie.
I know. So
I know. That's the subtitle of this episode. I know.
I'm with you and can appreciate the idea of Dom being this villain and the metaphor and symbolism of what it means that he has to go like against his family and the inner conflict that represents and the way in which the family has to try to save him, where you get the moment where they all harpoon his car or grappling hook his car and are trying to keep him in place so they can save him, and he breaks away. There's the symbolic energy and form and function and externalization of that that's like cool.
Yeah.
And same thing with at the very end when there's this wall of fire coming at him and all the cars surround him and protect him. So you get that inversion earlier from them being on the outside and him in the middle, and he's in his car, which is this symbol of like his masculine energy and
the cars are everything.
Bravado. Yeah. And then at the end, he is out of his car and vulnerable to the fire, and they all surround him and protect him. There's so much you can read into that and get from that. And we've talked before about you viewing these as kind of paintings in a way. And so I get like there's something to all of that in that journey. I just hate how it goes. There's something about how Cypher converts him and how like quickly he is kind of on board with her, and like the makeout scene with her, that it didn't work for me as feeling like I couldn't buy into it as much. I needed something more, even though they have his like the mother of his child and his child.
That's
held
not
hostage.
Enough to you for him, Vin Diesel to be doing what he's doing.
It is, but I mean, I get it, but I also didn't like the choice of suddenly bringing in like Elena with a baby, especially after the last couple movies were so emphasizing his relationship with Letty, that it felt like they wanted to have something that justified this, but they didn't. They wanted to have Letty be active in the movie and not be this damsel in distress, so they couldn't have Letty be the one. I kept reading too far into the machinations.
Yeah, I was gonna say like it. That's what it feels like to me, that like you're purely. We've talked about this with you, Chris, before. Yeah. We've talked about movies, music, like all kinds of art. To you, art a lot of the times is all about math. How much of something is happening for me to believe and like have it, like all the stuff you're describing, like it just speaks to the different ways we experience art and watch movies. I think like all that stuff you're saying, like I don't even think about it for a second. All I'm thinking is the movie is setting up. It's the next logical progression of Dom's storyline. Like, is he talks about family, but like, he hasn't built a family. He hasn't had his own kid. He doesn't know what that's like to create somebody in his own image like his father did, and like pass on his father's values. Like, to me, all that stuff like completely overshadows everything you're saying. Like, I don't even really care about that. Like, that's the aesthetic to me. That is what the driving force of the movie is. That's the key theme. And that's how I'm reading everything. Like, I completely understand that when Dom sees what Cypher has on him, that like he's going to take off. And I can see how painful it is for him to do that. And I guess from there, like, it doesn't become a question of like, am I seeing enough? I'm like, no, I just understand what the aesthetic of the movie is. I know what it's doing. And I assign that energy to everything that's happening with Dom and around Dom, with his family and all these people that are fighting to help him.
Doctora Ramos, a la sala de espera.
Hay un problema que afecta a muchos niños que no puedo resolver sola. Se llama estrés tóxico y esto aumenta el riesgo de problemas de salud. Pero hay pasos que los padres pueden tomar para superar el estrés tóxico. Aprende cómo en first5california.com.
And I also don't, I tend to not like miscommunication storylines. And while this is a little better, especially because they have trust in him, and it's getting at like the idea of trust and loyalty and belief, and I think they handle how the team reacts well. I just, miscommunication subplots like this, or plots like this, oftentimes aren't my cup of tea either.
You mean like Vin Diesel could have said something?
Yeah, even though she like threatens him if he says anything.
She's tracking every movement on Earth. Like, she'll hear him say it.
I know. It's just still like, there's just like a little, like, could he not have like passed a note to whatchamacallit? He meets with Deckard's mom.
Right.
Like, could he not have just said, by the way, like, blackmail, like, tell everybody else?
Again, that is not how I'm watching a movie. I don't care. Yeah. That would disrupt the tension, I feel like.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
I mean, it would, but it's also like the logical thing for someone
to... You want real life in these movies, Chris, and I don't want it one bit.
Yeah, yeah. It's...
I like my paintings.
Yeah, you like your pretty pictures.
I do, fuck yeah, I do. Proud of it.
I think it's also a byproduct of me, like writing so much, like being in that like novel writer mode to where... It's like, I can't help but look at the machinations of things and kind of the architecture of
them. Where it maybe matters a little more in a written story, where you have more room to explore that kind of stuff and like and find the art in that kind of writing. Like, to me, that's why it doesn't work so well in movies. Like, exposition in movies is boring. Like, you can't make it look that pretty. You can, but like, it's tougher and not as fun.
I think there's definitely like ways of going, like Fast Six, I think is a much better example of not doing all the kind of frustrating things that some of 7, 8, and 9 do.
You mean as far as like setting up those machinations?
Yeah, yeah. I also didn't buy in, and this is a huge like differential point for us. The redemption of Deckard Shaw.
Yeah, we got to talk about that. I mean, that's a crucial part of this movie.
I think it's the same thing with Giselle. I think it's stupid because it goes against the valuing of family.
And I think it's completely in line.
Because he is somebody who killed a family member.
In defense of his family.
I mean, yeah, but does that really change anything?
Absolutely. That is absolutely key to him being part of this mission in the first place, that him and Dom are able to respect each other's love of family. That is all part of their meeting at the very end of the movie when Deckard Shaw drops off his kid.
But Owen doesn't die. Like, Owen's okay. He's in the hospital.
Oh my God. So because Owen doesn't die, Deckard Shaw shouldn't be going after the Fast crew.
He shouldn't be killing them. Like, why? Like,
he hurt them. They maimed him. He's burned and changed forever, probably.
Eh.
Wow. So if that's really the crux of your argument, then I don't know, Chris. I don't think you're going to convert anybody on that one.
What? Owen is alive. He's active. Isn't he in?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's doing great, but like, Deckard Shaw didn't know that. He turned it around that quick. I mean, he should have known. This is the Fast and Furious movie. Nobody's ever really hurt or dead. So like, he should have known he was going to come back.
He should have had that meta awareness. But it's just, if his brother's hurt, but he's in the hospital, they're like, yeah, he's going to live. Like, he's going to have some scars. for him to go like kill Han, try to murder Brian, to do all these things, and then for the forgiveness to come almost immediately, it's too streamlined to me. I get that.
Yeah, again, you're talking about the machinations and laying things out. Like, they could have definitely gone through those steps. But once again, that sounds kind of boring to me. Like, in the same way that, like, I don't need those little steps set up for me to believe, like, Vin Diesel or that Dom is, like, going to go save his kid. Like, I just believe that. Like, I know that's part of his journey. The movie has told me that, and that is part of the energy and coloring everything. Same with Shaw. Like, I understand how it fits into that storyline. And Dom's desire to be a father and grow a family. And I know that Shaw's defending his family. Like, I can see how that all intermixes. And I don't need it. I guess I don't need him to get, like, that rigid and meticulous with it.
I mean, but you could just apply that back to the first movie and be like, why did Brian and Dom ever not have to get along? Why not just have them get along from the very beginning? And it's fine. It's like,
yeah,
you have them earn the respect along the way. And that's the story.
I'm with you on that. That movie is doing something different. Like, that is part of the energy. Like, I'm okay.
Good writing?
Yeah, good writing is subjective. I've read your good and bad writing articles, and I don't know if I've agreed with any of them. So the stuff you think is bad writing isn't bad writing to me.
Dilettante.
I think it's interesting. I mean, I love those articles, and like, it is a glimpse into your soul, but that is not how I watch movies.
Yeah, but I think Deckard went far enough as a villain that if you're going to make him part of the group, part of the team, part of the family, there has to be a path back that's a little bit more earned than just what they do in this movie. But again, I see the streamlined version of what you're talking about, and they do set it up with he also cares about family and there's that mutual respect, and they give him all these scenes. There's a reason why they have him being the one that saves the kid, because that's endearing. He gets to be like humanizing. I see it all, Travis, from the beginning. It's just
the other scene I absolutely love in this movie. The only reason I don't like the scene is, like, I know they're just doing it to set up Hobbs and Shaw, which is a movie I don't really like. But The Rock and Deckard's The Rock and Deckard Hobbs and Deckard's like, they meet up in the, when they're like fixing up the cars and getting ready for their mission, and The Rock reveals, like, hey, I read like your profile, and found out like you were a good guy, and like you were just like fighting to save like your brother. And Deckard turns around and says, like, yeah, I've read your file too, and like, I know you're great and I respect you too. And like, they have this moment where they're both giving each other props for like their commitment to a job and their morals and everything, while at the same time like tearing into each other and like riffing and like making balls jokes. Like, I just think that whole scene, the way The Rock and Jason Statham play it, is absolutely wonderful. It's one of my favorite scenes in the entire series. And their smile at the end when like they just like respect each other and like just like, all right, like, we're still gonna riff on each other, but like, you know, we respect what one another each other has done. I just think the whole energy of that scene is incredible.
You know, there's times where you dismiss some of the complaints that I have as exposition, like that's boring exposition, but what you just described is one of those scenes of like,
yeah,
in quotes, boring exposition,
but it's done well.
So the scenes that I'm talking about could be done well.
I've said this every time that I understand scenes of exposition can be done. I think I said that as I was complaining about exposition. My big complaint about exposition is it's not usually done well, or maybe almost never done well. It's done much better in the Fast and Furious movies. I'm just saying I don't need it. Like, I don't necessarily need a moment of dialogue, a conversation to happen for me to understand. And more actually what I think I'm referring to is like plot points, you know, like things that make the story make sense, in quotes. This is purely dedicated to character and a whole dynamic between two people, especially when another movie is being set up. Like, I think that's different.
I think it's in there with the logic of the, you need a moment like that to show that Shaw is part of the team, which is like an essential part of the plot.
No, I like the mix. I think it's okay to have a little of each, and I don't need it to be overwhelmingly conversational for me to understand that.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be overwhelmingly conversational. I'm just saying, I need it a little bit. the basic examples I give could be as well done as this, like, as quick and well done as this, like, one little moment here.
It could, but it wasn't. I mean, like, this is taking us back to the Giselle moment. Like, you want the movie to be doing things it's not doing. I'm reading what the movie's doing and responding to it. If the general thrust, the message is there, I don't need it to do more. Like, I understand what the energy is, and like, that is infused into the scenes, the action scenes, the emotion of everything going, like, that's all there. Moments where they do decide to insert stuff like this, like, it can work. It doesn't have to be there, but if they do it and they do it well, like, I'm happy they did it well.
Yeah, I think it's just, it seems sometimes you assume that when I want something like that, it's going to inherently be bad. That's or true. Come off as like a negative thing, rather than it could be this quick and this,
yeah,
like you said, this is one of your favorite
scenes.
You're
right.
In the entire,
you got me
series.
There, Chris. You got me there.
Like, it can be done just as
it can be done, well. But I'm glad it's not done most of the time, because it's, again, usually not done well and usually the most boring scene in a movie.
Don't give me more of the thing that's one of my favorite moments in the entire series.
Well, yeah, if you're going to do it. But that's the other thing. If they did that scene like 15 times, I would be annoyed. Yeah,
then it loses its power. But,
and that scene really works, too, because of the actors. Like, I think both of those guys are fucking killing it in these movies. And like, they just have great energy together. I don't know why it didn't translate to the movie, but it didn't.
Dude, I think The Rock gets progressively worse in all of these movies.
Yeah, you did say something along those lines, and that still baffles me.
I think he becomes a lot more of a caricature. Like, he wants to be a superhero in these movies and starts elevating his scenes in a way that just feels so much more like, give me a rocket launcher. Give me, like, this thing that he wants to be the alpha in any of the action scenes. And I think that
probably did happen away. Knowing The Rock and his ego, but I'm not complaining. Like, he's killing it. Like, he's delivering 100% in these movies, and I love it.
I think it's just a little too much.
I want these movies. That's why these movies are incredible. They give a little bit too much, not even a little bit too much. Like, they're going way for, they are doing things movies are not allowed to do. They are breaking the rules. That's why I love these movies.
What about, do you feel the same way at all about the Expendables franchise?
I'm a fan of the Expendables, but I don't think I would. I don't know if I would necessarily go that far. I guess I don't know if they're doing what the Fast movies do.
Yeah, that there's that element of the humanity, and
there's a little, like, bit of irony to the Expendables movie. Like, there's no irony to the Fast movies.
No, there is not. It's,
they mean it,
as gung ho as it gets. I had some philosophical issues with this movie. Maybe on like rewatch, some of the initial shock would be out of the way and I'd just be enjoying more of what's going on. But there's just like a number of moments where I was just like,
I mean, the movie kind of commits to it out of the gate when, that's Furious 7. I was thinking of, I mean, Furious 7's pretty crazy. It does commit to it out of the gate when Deckard goes to the hospital and essentially blows up the hospital where his brother's staying and trying to get better. Like, it's such a ridiculous thing to do. Again, I have no qualms with it, because it's just fun and ridiculous, but it is like, it's a move.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I did like Ramsey, and some of the scenes, like, bring Ramsey in the previous movie and like developing, like, mm-hmm. I liked the addition of her character. I wasn't sure I liked Scott Eastwood, and Little Nobody.
Well, you didn't like Big Nobody, so you probably didn't like the little one.
No, it also felt like too soon. It felt like it was kind of maybe trying to do like a Brian replacement, like a Paul
Walker
replacement.
That's definitely why he's there.
Yeah, that they even gave him, did they give him like a blue STI or something that kind of recalled the skyline?
I don't remember that
in some ways.
Probably.
It just felt like a little, that felt like the studio meddling to me.
It could have been. I think Scott Eastwood is awesome. And that's the other thing I didn't even address. I let this slide and I shouldn't have when you said you didn't like the Mr. Nobody stuff. Mr. Nobody's Kurt Russell. Like, that dude is in there. Like, maybe he's on set for like 30 minutes or something, but like the 30 minutes he's given them, he is just giving them pure gold.
Yeah. I like Kurt Russell, but eh.
We didn't even talk about the jail sequence. Oh my God. Incredible. Incredible. F. Gary Gray did an incredible job in this movie. It made me want to watch The Italian Job, which I've never seen.
I feel like I saw it in not like the remake Italian Job.
The Mark Wahlberg one.
Oh yeah.
Didn't he make it? Yeah, he did make it.
Yeah. I can't remember if I watched that or not.
Oh man. That's the other thing we didn't really get into. It's tough because it's so visual, but I just think the way he handled all these action sequences was incredible. Like, I'm in it from moment. It flows so well in a way that I think exposes why F9 doesn't work as well. Like, it's just, there's never a moment where I feel out of it and it doesn't make sense. Like, I'm just constantly in it.
I did like it better than 7 and 9 in terms of the action, even if it was still... no, F9 is the one that has the Havana intro. Or no, that's this one.
Yeah, that's this one. I love the intro. I love that scene so much. Did you have a problem with that scene?
It's just, again, like tonally a little absurd.
It's got me. I'm in it from the word go. when that's the opening scene, I'm like, all right, you got me.
But they do use that scene to also set up the Deckard acceptance of him, like... That guy tried to screw Dom over and Dom wins his respect and would rather make like a friend than an enemy. Yeah. So there is that like logic put in place him accepting Deckard.
That's the beautiful thing about these movies is like you're talking about the logic of it and like that's totally true. But like that key moment that sets up Vin Diesel's character and sets up that conversation he's going to have with Cypher and determines their whole dynamic. That scene isn't just like a really quick one-off scene that happens at the beginning. Like, it's a whole fucking scene, 20-minute scene where, like, you're seeing all this tension and, like, bad guys and, like, jawing in a crazy car race. Like, that's all the build-up to I respect you. And, like, that defines his character. That's why I love these movies that, like, nothing's ever boring. Like, even the smallest little character bit is surrounded by just manic craziness.
Which can be boring. Can
be boring. What? It's the opposite of boring. What other movie would do something like that?
It's a fair.
That's why I think other movies are boring. That like they aren't going this far. I want movies to go this far.
Did you love Ready Player One?
I have not seen it. As much of a Spielberg fanboy as I am, I've never seen it.
I'd be curious how you feel about like. The action in that.
I probably like it.
You probably will. What was the other thing that just came up in... Oh, I thought they did Elena kind of dirty.
I mean, literally they did. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Not to repeat our Giselle conversation, because...
Please do.
We're either going to have to skip fast or F9 or talk about it quickly or have just a longer episode, but... The Rock, Hobbs and Elena had Elena's like biggest dynamic was clearly with Dom, right? Mm-hmm. But they really put her in more scenes with Hobbs over the course of the franchise than they did with Dom.
Right.
So even though Dom had like the larger emotional connection with her due to their relationship, Hobbs cared about her, liked her. Like we associate, I think, her character with Hobbs a lot. I don't think we got his reaction to Elena dying in the movie at all, did we?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Which seems just like a missed opportunity to me. Not that they have to have it, but...
I'd agree with that, yeah.
it's that world building that I think is some of the payoff that we would like to see.
Yeah, that's true. It's especially thinking about the opening of Furious 7 and like him saving her and everything. Like, they do have an intensely close-knit relationship.
Yes. Yeah, so that's something where, just like you were just kind of emphasizing that relationship in the previous movie, and now nothing?
Yeah, I get why they skip it, just because it doesn't exactly pertain to Vin Diesel's storyline, which that was, I think, the reason I didn't love this movie as much the first time I saw it. I actually have grown to love this movie more and more as I've watched it. But I got a little annoyed with Vin Diesel at some point. Like, the way you were reading The Rock's ego kind of shrouding everything, like, that's how I felt read Vin Diesel a little bit at first. I'm not in that camp anymore, by the way. But for a little bit, I was like that. And it felt like, to me, like, Fate of the Furious was just, like, all about Dom in a way that didn't allow it to be about anybody else. And yeah. I had problems with that. And I assume that's why we don't get The Rock reacting to her dying, is because, like, it's just all about Dom. But now I kind of see that, like, Dom is he's the centerpiece of the franchise. Like, everything everybody's going through kind of does revolve around him, and, like, is part of, like, that group dynamic, and does in turn drive everybody's storyline. So, like, I don't have a problem with it anymore, but I could see someone having a problem with it because of that.
Yeah, I get that just made me think of one other thing, but I can't remember. I immediately forgot about it because I looked at the Fast 9 Wikipedia page real quick, and then it went out of my head.
So yeah, are we gonna do F9, or do we think we want to save it?
I mean, I guess save it. It kind of gives us three movies to talk about with Hobbs and Shaw, F9 and F10.
Sure.
Or FX.
Are you gonna watch Hobbs and Shaw
the next one? Yeah, gonna watch Hobbs and Shaw, because I realized I forgot to watch Hobbs and Shaw.
Vanessa Kirby's in it. She's great.
Who?
Vanessa Kirby. She's been nominated for an Oscar, Chris. She's blonde. She got nominated for, was it called Pieces of Me? I think it was like a Netflix movie. She's in the new Mission Impossibles. She's British.
Nope.
All right. I thought she was big anyway, but if you don't know her, maybe she's not as big as I thought.
I mean, it might just be, I'm excited to see.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I guess we'll just talk about those three movies. I don't know if a conversation about Cops and Shaw could even take that long. I'm going to have the same reaction to it I have the Tokyo Drift.
Oh, she was in Fallout. Okay. Yeah. So I've definitely, yeah. Okay.
Pieces of a Woman. That's what it's called.
I did not see that either. I've only seen I've seen Jupiter Ascending, but.
Oh, yeah.
And About Time. That's right. She was Joanna in About Time.
She's great, though.
Okay, nice. Well, then we'll talk about those in the next one.
Yeah. That wasn't as contentious as I expected.
No, that was okay.
I mean, you're completely wrong about everything you said, but, like, that's okay.
Oh, I remember the plot, the thing that I was going to bring up. The Dom being evil storyline was kind of a repetition of Letty being evil.
Right.
And you don't like that. Number six. It just takes, like, a little bit of something away. Like, hey, wasn't that cool when we did it with Letty? Let's do it with Dom.
Right. Disagree. I only care how Fair. It's handled. I don't care what they're doing.
Yeah, I know that. Well, until next time.
Yep, see you on the other side.